Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I'm not doing a press conference today, but we'll be seeing you guys during the course of this week.
Go, 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 Johnny, go, 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 Johnny, go, go.
Press freedom, but no questions from the press. Instead, the stooges of the American media were used like the fake doctors to push through Obamacare. Welcome to the new Soviet Union of the United States of America under Obama. Right, play a little. They can't hear him now. Where did he disappear? The last days of freedom. Yeah, I mean, have you ever seen anything like this? The president signs a Press Freedom Act and then denies to answer questions from the press, and they stand there like stooges, used like the fake doctors. Whenever you see a doctor in public with a stethoscope, you know he's posing. And whenever you see a newsman with a pen and pad, you know he's posing. And so the posies, all of the little posies, got up there for Obama. Obama signs a Press Freedom Act. And he won't answer any questions of the so-called press. All of the chips and all of the empty skirts sit there. Use the stooges. Okay, you're not interested in it. What can you do? The answer is nothing. You're watching America go to you-know-where in a handbasket. Now, what else do you want me to talk about today? Miss USA's pole dance shots that came out today. She's an Arab American from Dearborn, Michigan. She's certifiably beautiful. She should be a Miss USA. But it came out today that she was seen doing a strip job in front of a pole. Now, I mean, I don't pay much attention to what that is, what it means. But are they supposed to pretend that they're, what, Snow White, all of them? You actually believe that girls who push their way to the top of the Miss USA contest are virgins? You believe that they're Snow White and that shocks you? Or that one of them appeared in their lingerie? I mean, the whole thing doesn't make sense. I mean, what world are we living in? Suddenly it's 1950 and Finns are back? It's like Finns of the mind. Okay, you want me to talk about the Pennsylvania primary? You know, that's very exciting. You talk about sexy. Arlen Specter as a sexy topic. Wow, I'll get real excited if Arlen Specter gets thrown out. That's really going to make my day. Or if Rand Paul wins, Ron Paul's son. Yeah, okay. How about Richard Blumenthal regrets misplaced words on Vietnam service? How about Obama? No, that's too hot a topic to talk about. Or do you want me to tell you what happened last night at the museum, a night at the museum, as promised yesterday? I'm not sure you want to hear about the exhibit, the closed. It had never been open to the public, Birth of Impressionism. So I went. I was invited because I happen to love Impressionist paintings. Who doesn't? We all grew up on them. I mean, everybody grew up on Impressionist paintings. Everybody who went to college had to study the Impressionists, right? And so many of you say, ah, that's passé. We don't look at it anymore. Who needs it? We know all about it. You don't know all about it. In fact, I went there and found three new paintings that I didn't know existed. I take that back. I did know they existed. One of them I knew existed. The Floor Scrapers from 1875 by Calabot. Unbelievable. Raboteurs de Parquet, to show you I know French. The Magpie by Monet. 1868. And then most important to me, which was the painting that was very political, The Escape of Rochefort by Manet. Now, why did that painting have any relevance for me? The Escape of Rochefort. I'm going to read this to you for 1 minute, and then we'll move on to straight politics, but I want to read this to you. It caught me. It's basically a picture of a sea, and in the midst of this big painting of a sea, there's a small picture of men in a rowboat. And you read it, Edouard Manet, The Escape of Rochefort, 1881. Now, just listen to the paragraph. It doesn't matter whether you went to college or not. Henri Rochefort founded the controversial political journal La Lantern, The Lantern, and was actively opposed to the imperial regime of Napoleon III. Sounds like Obama I, doesn't it? This led to his involvement in the Paris Commune, for which he was imprisoned. Press freedom, anyone? Manet depicts Rochefort's daring escape from a French prison colony in New Caledonia. Intended for the Salon of 1881, Manet's political commentary transforms the recent past into modern history. Amen, does it ever. It's interesting to me that they didn't kill political opponents. They didn't send out Secret Service agents or secret agents to spy on them. Well, they arrested them and they, you know, excommunicated them, in this case, to New Caledonia, which you have to understand how far away New Caledonia is and how far away New Caledonia was from Paris in the 1880s. If you've been to any part of the South Pacific, you realize it may as well be the end of the world. That he escaped is astounding. But that brings us front and center to today, which is the art of today. Art of today, from the political, it's become the polemical. I'm going to ask you a simple question. You don't have to be educated. You don't have to like art to answer this question, right? Here's the question. Can you name one artist in the United States of America? Name one. You can't. Can you name any artist from France who speaks today for France? Can you name one German artist? No, you don't know of any because there are none. It doesn't mean there aren't people who are painting, there aren't people who are sculpting, there are. But there are no prominent artists in any Western nation. So you say, wait a minute, how did this happen? How did we wind up in a place where there are no artists that we know of? How come we don't know of an artist in America? Can you name one scientist in America? You can't. How come there's not one prominent scientist? In other words, if you look back 50 years, you all heard of Jonas Salk. You heard of a physicist named Albert Einstein. You know what I'm saying? The giants. How come there are no giants in the sciences, the arts today? There's an answer to that as well. In my opinion, I have the answer for that. It has to do with liberalism. Liberalism deconstructed the entire West, all of Western civilization, and destroyed it. And the reason they deconstructed Western civilization is to enable themselves to reconstruct it in the image of a gigantic new Sovietized world where there is no art except art which serves the state. Witness the Obama posters during the campaign, where there is no science other than science which supports the government. Do you follow what I'm saying to you? You have to understand where I'm coming from to understand what I'm saying at all. So last night I attended an art show at the De Young Museum, classical paintings from the Impressionist era, and I was again taken in by their beauty. But I ask you, where in America today are such works of art being created? Can you name one artist today that creates works of art on the level of a Degas or Renoir? Well, what's amazing is that even the art of that era was sometimes political, as I just showed you. But in the world of art, we've gone from the political to the polemical. Can you think of a single artist today whose art is intended to uplift instead of to offend? Can you think of an artist who describes instead of degrades? Can you think of an artist who reveres instead of reviles America? There's no one. No Western nation currently produces great artists or sculptors, and it's because of the same left-wing ism that has destroyed our political system. The very same left that would laud a loser like Woody Allen, who wishes that there would be a dictatorship where Obama could be a dictator if it wasn't for those nasty Republicans. This is from a Jew. This is from a liberal Jew who wishes for a dictatorship. This is why I've told you years ago that you actually shouldn't fear these people. You should pity them. Liberalism is a mental disorder, a very serious one. What Woody Allen doesn't know is that when the Nazis rose to power in Germany, and that was a dictatorship, I guess that was a bad dictatorship. It certainly was, but to Woody Allen, there was only one bad dictatorship. That was that of Nazi Germany. But I guess the Soviet Union had a good dictatorship under Stalin. Now, what did the Germans do? The Nazis took many of the great works of art, which they considered to be degenerate, and removed them from museums, particularly the art of Jews. They took away the art of Chagall, Kandinsky, and they removed them from public view, but they didn't destroy them. No, did they? Not at all. Ironically, those paintings and many other classical works of art were stolen and hoarded by high-ranking officials of the Nazi regime. Now, what happened in Russia is after the Russian Revolution, the Bolsheviks tried to put all art into the service of the dictatorship of the proletariat. Stalin issued a decree, quote, on the reconstruction of literary and art organizations, and only art in the, quote, socialist realism style was allowed. What does this have to do with America today? Well, listen. The Nazis and the Soviets were both socialist regimes. Never be deceived. We know the Soviets were socialist. That you know. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republic. But you didn't know that the Nazis were socialist until I told you this 4 years ago. And they allowed only art that fell in line with their extreme political agenda. And what did they do? They depicted muscled factory workers in overalls struggling in a steel foundry. Or heroic visions of soldiers hearkening back to the Roman Empire. These paintings, posters, and sculptures were propaganda, not real art. And so you go even to China under Mao Zedong. Remember the peasant posters of the noble peasant working in the field? Again, that's an example of state-sponsored art. And what's happening today? That's the real question. Well, what's happening today is that real art has been hollowed out and replaced with garbage that serves the needs of the state. Do you realize that great art is by its very nature conservative? That crap art is by its very nature liberal? A great painting conserves a moment in time or an emotion so that it can be experienced by future generations. The conservative bees build up the hive. The progressive termites tear down the hive. They critique art, they impose meanings upon it that are designed to further their far-left political agendas. And so the art that is created by leftists is destructive. For example, a painting of the Virgin Mary in elephant dung, a crucifix in a jar of urine, or a mindless repetition of images such as Andy Warhol's soup cans. Why was that designed? What is it designed for? Well, all of those pieces of dreck were designed to render the very structure of art meaningless. Remember, the goal of liberal, postmodern, deconstructive art is to tear down the old institutions like the Catholic Church, the family, the nation, and replace them with chaos. And then in that chaos, there is an environment ripe for takeover by a monolithic dictatorial view of culture in which only one opinion on an issue is allowed, and that is the opinion of the government. And in the world of art, this means giant posters of the great leader mounted on every empty wall, as we saw with the Obama posters that appeared in 2008. In the political world, it means a dictatorship, the kind of dictatorship that Woody Allen and other so-called members of the progressive art community wish Obama had. The left has deconstructed art, and now the left is trying to deconstruct our nation as well. That's it. Michael Savage on the political to the polemical. I'll be right back. Savage. See, you don't want to hear music from the period of the Impressionist, Aquarium by Camille Saint-Saëns. Does this match the times? It's too beautiful. What you want is crack music. That matches the times. Play some crack music for the audience. Give them what they want. Now you're talking. That's the American art of today. There you go. That's the America of today. All a result of white liberals. White liberals destroyed art so that this could emerge. Hey, now you got what you want. Hey, you don't want the Camille Saint-Saëns. What you want is this, something with gold teeth in it. You want to be able to sink your gold teeth in it. What you want is the gold teeth in it. What you want to do is sink your teeth into the gold in the teeth. You want gold teeth in it. You want to sink your gold teeth in it. All right, you got the point. I made the point already. Now let's move on. So I made the point. So the art of today doesn't exist. We have something lower than hieroglyphics in literature, in art, science. There is no science left, as you could see with the fake global warming research. Science is dead as well, because it was killed, again, by big government. Big government killed science. Either you did what big government wanted, or you didn't get a grant. So what kind of creative person could stay in science? Now, we know television sucks, except for the few movies and shows here and there. We know that. But by and large, it appeals to the lowest common denominator. And we know that CNN is the lowest of the low of the cable channels. That's a given. But there's something lower than CNN, and that's Headline News, which is owned by CNN. I discovered a creature lower than Nancy Graceless. This woman attacked Amish people the other day in the most cowardly, despicable way I've ever heard in my life. You know, there's one thing that I have to respect about the Muslim people. They stand up for their religion. I will tell you that if I were an Amish person, I'd be more than offended by this creature. Listen to clip 20.
Okay, nude photos of Emma, the Amish model, have come out on the internet. The people of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, were so upset they dimmed all their candles for a minute.
So some pervert with curly hair and big glasses in the back room wrote that. Someone who hates the goys. And of course, they know that the Amish are nonviolent, so they take their shots not at the radical Muslims, but at the Amish. But then this vermin, this gutter rat, gets worse in 21.
So what is it about this then, Jay? She's just being like men are turned on by the Amishness? What?
Originally, she was turned down for Mennonite porn. And all I can say about Amish
Which
porn...
Which is hotter? Mennonite or Amish?
Mennonite's way hotter. Oh, yeah, it's very
okay.
racy.
All right.
And all I can say about Amish porn is finally...
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
You can see where she would, like, rebel if she really is Amish. All that butter churning all the years.
There are ways to rebel, and then there are ways to really rebel.
Yeah.
But this that is butter extreme. Churning and porn sounds hot. That sounds good. I think that you just come up with her next move.
Yeah, that's her. She's
that's
got, like,
girl?
A candy machine in between her legs. Whatever.
Well, I mean, what else are you going to call it?
I don't know. Okay. Okay. Now,
Yeah, no, that's a candy machine.
Okay, before I move on, I want to apologize, first of all, if we've upset our Amish viewers, and that goes for both of you.
So this is a gutter rat. This is the type that brings about revolution with her vileness. This gutter rat has nothing to say about radical Islam. This gutter rat said nothing about the Times Square bomber. This gutter rat said nothing about the Muslim who killed troops at Fort Hood. But this gutter rat attacks the Amish because they're nonviolent people. And this is what's permitted on CNN today. If I were Amish, I'd be more than angry. And again, I take my hat off to the Muslims who stand up for their religion. I only wish the Christians did. This is the Savage Nation. If you care to comment on this, save it for the gutter rat. Don't call the show. Send it to the gutter rat's boss. Don't send it to me. Send it to the gutter rat's sponsors. Don't send it to me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass.
So I'm at the Impressionist Art Exhibit last night, knocking down the roast beef, the chicken, the green beans. This is all before the art. I mean, these were people who were fairly affluent. You never saw them rush for the buffet like this. You'd think that they were all homeless and starving, but that's typical about free food. I don't care what your social level is. A rush to that buffet, I thought I was back in the Catskill Mountains in the 1950s. And I'm chomping down the roast beef with the best of them. And along comes one of the most prominently far-left lawyers in San Francisco. And she says hello. And I say hello, because actually at the end of the day, I can be quite diplomatic when I want to be. And we start to talk, and I bring up President Obama's Freedom of the Press Act. And I say to her, I mean, remember, she's a devout liberal who's against the Arizona law. I won't give up any more than that. So I say, well, you know, the president just signed the Freedom of the Press Act. What do you think about representing me with regard to England? She said, I thought you were off the list. I said, no, I'm not. Somehow there's misinformation that Michael Savage was taken off the list of murderers and terrorists. She says, that's a clear First Amendment violation. The government has to represent you. So here's a diehard lifetime family Democrat, far-left activist, who realizes that my being banned in England is not only a bad thing, it's an illegal thing. And then she says this to me and that to me. We went on, you know, we left it on a cordial level. I don't know whether either of us made any points with the other, but the fact of the matter is, truthfully, conversation is the key to survival in this world from whichever point of view you may stand. In other words, without communication, there's nothing but hate. And you know where hate leads to, don't you? And that's why when I say to you, the gutter rat on Headline News makes a mockery of the Amish, because she knows the Amish are kind, gentle, nonviolent people. But that gutter rat and her vermin friends laugh at Amish people, and Headline News doesn't throw her off the air. Headline News continues to think this is funny. You know, CNN really has to have its day of reckoning, and I don't know how that can ever happen other than it's happening because you stopped listening to them. And thank you for doing that. So let's go back to some of the callers. Linda in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hi, Michael. How do we get this disgusting Joy Behar off TV? How do we do that?
You don't get her off the air. This was a gutter rat. In other words, when I was a kid and my dad had a store in the Lower East Side, on Rivington Street, there was an open market, and there was a pickle salesman who had a daughter who was mentally disturbed, who was a twin for Joyce Behar. And she rolled her tongue at men as they walked by, if you get the drift.
Yep.
She foamed at the mouth. But today, it's like the sideshow at the circus. So you take the freaks and you put them on cable news. What can I say?
She certainly is a freak.
You know, it's one thing to say I disagree with her, I don't like her, I don't even talk about her. But when I heard her ridiculing the Amish, I got very angry. And I figured I had to run this today. How do you feel about her ridiculing the Amish people?
You know, Michael, she always covers it up with a joke. And she's allowed to.
How come she doesn't tell any jokes about Muhammad the bomber?
Yeah, that's what I would like to know.
And what would happen if someone ridiculed Jews? Tell me what would happen if somebody made a joke about Jews in the same manner. And then they went on the air and they said, I want to apologize to anybody who's Jewish who listened to my show and was offended, the both of you. Would you think they'd be on the air the next day?
Yeah, I know. I see your point.
You see my point? Okay, well, I'm pointedly giving you my point. That's all. Now, I say that there's no great artist today because you can't name one. There may be some great painters or good painters around, but there's no great painters around. If there are, I never heard of them. So you don't have to worry much longer because Nancy Pelosi is going to create the next wave of state-sponsored artists who will make heroic posters of Barack Obama for every household, and no doubt he will paint heroic portraits of Nancy Pelosi baking lasagna for America. Listen to Nancy Pelosi.
We see it as an entrepreneurial bill, a bill that says to someone, if you want to be creative and be a musician or whatever, you can leave your work, focus on your talent, your skill, your passion, your aspirations, because you will have health care. You don't have to be job locked.
You don't have to be job locked. You see, in the socialist America, all of the sensitive artists no longer have to work their day job as barristers or as delivery boys with nose rings. They can now stay home and smear feces on a canvas, and the government will give them health care. And that's her idea of entrepreneurship. You know, we've read it before, Alice in Wonderland, Through the Looking Glass. We're living in an insane time. We have totally insane leaders running America. Never mind that they're leftists. They're crazy. They criticize the Arizona immigration law, and one after the other says, I never read it, but I know it's no good. That goes for the attorney general. That goes for Big Sis Napolitano. They haven't read the law, but they're critical of it. Does this not worry you to realize we're in the hands of such incompetent people? I believe it should. But then again, I have lost my bearings with regard to the American people that they put up with this. What else do you want to talk about? San Diego, Adam, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
Michael, I see what you're saying about the artist, but I got to humbly disagree with you. I've been a musician my whole life, and I look around, and the minute you were saying that, I instantly thought of about four or five American composers who are living right now who are doing absolutely phenomenal things.
Great. And let me hear them. Please tell us their names, because we don't know them.
Up in your area, there's a man named John Adams. He actually wrote a couple operas, one about Nixon in China, one about the death of Klinghoffer. There's a really young guy, early 30s, named John Mackey up in the Bay Area, doing some absolutely phenomenal things. There's a guy out of Vegas named Eric Whitaker doing some gorgeous choral work. I mean, there's a guy out of Alabama named Robert.
Well, let me make a suggestion since I've opened up this topic. Why don't you, if you know them, have them send me some of their work. We'll play it on the air and let the audience judge if they think it's great work.
Absolutely.
But I'm not sitting here as the be-all and end-all. I think my point is slightly different than the fact that there aren't talented people out there. There are many talented people. There always have been. But as you know, there's a wide chasm between talent and genius. Would you have to agree with that?
I would agree. I think part of it.
So are these people talented and very talented, or are they geniuses?
I would say a couple of them are geniuses. John Adams and Eric Whitaker are absolute.
All right, but we're talking about music. Unless we hear it, how are the people going to say, well, wow, that guy's as good as Stravinsky, or, for example, you name your favorite composer?
Well,
what you're saying is that they're somewhere between crack music and something great.
Would you
say that any crack artists are great artists?
No way.
All right. I just want to know where you're coming from. Would you consider crack music to be music at all?
Technically, yes. It depends what your definition of music is. Technically, yes. I mean, if you think of music, it's just a combination of sound and silence. But what we get great.
No, you're very good. That's absolutely true. Right. It makes sound.
I mean, there was,
it makes sound. Crack music is not music per se at all. And yet, the deconstructionists on the left have elevated crack music to the level of Chopin. They've said that it's just a different culture and a different view. And that's my whole point, which is that by deconstructing the great works of art, they've opened it up to virtually anybody to do anything. You can smear urine on a wall. You can dip an elephant, put a urine on a crucifix. You can create crack music, and you can call it great art. And the American people have been so beaten up by the American left, particularly in universities, they no longer know the difference between Debussy and Mr. Crack.
Absolutely. No, very, very true, very true. I think a lot of it, too, is our culture is so dumbed down. We have a dumbed down fast food culture that just doesn't have the time or the patience or the intellect to sit down and process great music as well.
Well, but my point is slightly different, which is the American left over 40 years has deconstructed society. They have deconstructed the family, saying mother and father and child is not the family. The family is anything you want it to be. Is that correct?
Correct. Uh-huh.
All right. So they've destroyed virtually the entire edifice of Western civilization. But they didn't do it just to destroy it. They did it because they wanted to create chaos. Because out of chaos, they can recreate society. They can reconstruct it in any way they want. And what they're doing is reconstructing it and giving us, for example, an unqualified pretender for the presidency who we all know is not a president. Don't you remember the first few months of Obama, how uncomfortable he looked climbing up the steps of Air Force One, how he would look back almost embarrassingly and say, I cannot believe my handlers pulled this off. I am not qualified to be president. Do you remember those first months?
I do.
Well, has it gotten any better now?
Nope.
The man hasn't read the Arizona immigration law, but he's against it. The faker as attorney general hasn't read the Arizona immigration law, but he's against it. The faker in the Department of Homeland Security hasn't read the Arizona immigration law, but he's against it. The secretary of the army says it's not radical Islam behind the Fort Hood shooting. How much worse can this get? Answer, much worse. Much worse. Soon you can wake up and you're going to hear that we've decided to privatize the U.S. military as we have privatized NASA. And the schmucks who can sort of call themselves conservatives say, well, that's good. I'm all for privatizing. I actually spoke to a guy who considers himself a genius who thought it was great that Obama said he was going to privatize NASA. Why? Because Obama's clever enough to use the word privatize. Really? So he took a private medical system and turned it into a public option? Why? Why did he make it into basically a public medical system? Well, because it was the best private system in the world, so he destroyed it by making it public. So now he takes NASA and he wants to privatize it. And you say, well, that's good because I'm a conservative and I believe in privatizing. But he didn't do it for that reason. He did it to destroy NASA. He did it to destroy space exploration. Do you understand there's not an accident? This was not an accident. This is by design. Now you say, well, I'm all wrong. Well, four astronauts came out today and said, I'm right. They said, that's right. Nobody consulted with any of the astronauts who have actually been to the moon. And they all say there's nothing in Obama's plan for privatizing NASA that will produce anything in the space program in the future of any value with regard to human beings in space. It is all an attempt to destroy space exploration and give it over to the Russians and the Chinese. Don't you understand what could happen next? Obama could get up and he could say, in order to save money, we're going to privatize, I'll give you an example, the U.S. Navy. And we're going to save $50 billion the first week. We're going to privatize the U.S. Navy. We're turning it over to the People's Republic of China, who are no longer a threat. They're our friends. They're going to be manning our ships. They're going to be running our ships for us. But don't worry. They're our ally. We've signed a non-aggression pact with Communist China. They're now our best friend. You get the picture? You don't understand any of this. I mean, I'm standing here like a man in the wilderness. I start with a museum, and I'm telling you the danger you're in, and you're not believing me. Many of you still don't understand the danger you're in. This reminds me of a movie I saw. Okay, I'll put it in terms of a movie. It was called, well, I forget what it was called. I saw it on TV, then I even ordered it. The Secret, A Secret, rather, written, I even ordered the book, written about a period in Germany, in France, in the 1930s. middle-class Jewish family, not religious, disconnected from their religion, just like the average person. In fact, the parents are athletes. The father's a bodybuilder and a businessman. The mother is a champion swimmer. And it shows the early 30s with Hitler rising. And they go to the movie theater. It shows them sitting there watching the newsreels of Hitler taking over one country after another. And they don't pay any attention to it. They say, who cares? It doesn't matter to me what he's doing. Well, very soon thereafter, they're wearing yellow stars. Soon thereafter, they're being deported to the death camps. And that's because they didn't pay any attention to the early newsreels. They thought that it was, of no interest to them. It's only news. It's all crapola. And after all, it's more fun bashing the Amish, letting the gutter rats bash the Amish, isn't it? Isn't it fun bashing the Amish? You know, like a pickle woman? Oh, I love bashing the Amish and the Christians. I can get away with it. Okay, take a break, Mike.
Savage.
Have we had enough fun yet? I mean, on the Savage Nation. We've touched on five or six different topics. We know that we have a bunch of incompetent radical leftists running America off the rails. We know that we have a dictatorship. Obama signs Freedom of Press Act, then denies to answer questions to the stooge press that was ushered in, like the fake doctors who were ushered in for the healthcare signing. I mean, it's all out of the ex-Soviet Union. Everything is a pose. We learned today that the terrorists are in fact crossing the U.S.-Mexican border, that most illegals caught crossing are from Mexico, but thousands are classified as OTMs, including hundreds from nations that sponsor terrorists, and you don't know anything about that. Instead, Eric Holder gives a commencement speech, frankly, about nothing, not about the Middle Easterners crossing the border in from Mexico. Then you have Obama welcoming the University of Connecticut's women's basketball team to the White House. I'm sure he took questions from them. Listen to clip 16.
Congratulations to the UConn Huskies on your second straight undefeated season and the second straight NCAA championship. I want to point out this team has not lost a game since I was elected president.
Isn't that great that he invites a basketball team, a women's basketball team, to the White House and took questions, but he invites the press and won't take questions? Then we have a character, a far-left, a Maoist, okay? Think a pile of human skulls. He went to Harvard. He taught there. His name is Cass Sunstein. He's a czar. Tsar Nikolai Sunstein. Parents fled Russia. The grandparents fled Russia. And this little petty dictator, this martinet from Harvard, would like to be a little dictator himself. So here he's appointed as a communist czar under Obama. And Sunstein wants to control all information on the internet. Listen to 19. This is chilling.
Sites of one point of view agree to provide links to other sites so that if you're reading a conservative magazine, they would provide a link to a liberal site and vice versa, just to make it easy for people to get access to competing views. Or maybe a pop-up on your screen that would show an advertisement or maybe even a quick argument for a competing view. If we could get voluntary arrangements in that direction, it would be great. And if we can't get voluntary arrangements, maybe Congress should hold hearings about mandates.
So Sunstein's grandfather fled the Tsar of Russia, no doubt. And now little Sunstein, the petty martinet, would like to become the Tsar of the Internet. And so that's as the world turns. Is there anything new under the sun? So he wants Congress to mandate different points of view. Now, how would that work? Let me see if that works to my advantage or disadvantage. I watch the evening news with the despicable creatures on CBS, for example. The low-life liars on the alphabet channels. And what, they let me get up there and give a competing opinion, Mr. Sunstein? Would that be mandated by Congress? Well, let's go a step further. When Obama lies, does something pop up on the teleprompter screen where we could see his lies or a competing view, Mr. Sunstein? Does that work as well for the government? Well, let's say when you lie, Mr. Sunstein, which apparently you do for a living, and do the American people get to see a little bubble that pops up every time you open up your mouth that competes with your point of view, Mr. Sunstein? Or that only applies to the internet sites that you don't agree with, Mr. Sunstein? So there it is again. I mean, wherever you turn, every rock you turn over, there's another dictator waiting to emerge. Waiting to emerge from the womb of hate is the dictator. Slain woman found a suitcase. Now reading the local headlines. Nothing about Obama's lies nor Obama's dictatorship. Here it is. Sorry, no cash for iPads. This disabled woman saved up enough bills to buy a device, but Apple denied her. Slain woman found a suitcase in bay. Every day they attack Palin. They attack her every way that they can. Murder, suicides, you know, the standard Nancy Graceless stuff. Democrats call Kagan abortion memo troubling, whatever that means. Let's see. Coco, the attacking pit bull, faces jury this week. Cops find naked drunk teen in stranger's tub. Now, this was once a decent newspaper. Never great. It was never a great paper, but it was a good newspaper. Look what it's become. The Genghis Khan exhibition at the Tech Museum. What? The Genghis Khan exhibition at the Tech Museum? They're going to imply that Genghis Khan was an advanced techie? What? Explore the only West Coast appearance in 2010 of Genghis Khan's life during the formation, peak, and decline of the Mongol Empire. Learn about the two faces of Genghis Khan, conqueror, statesman. Khan's infamous brutality is well known, but there was another side to the man who would form the first united Mongol nation, providing artistic and religious freedom and safety for its people. So here is an example again, left-wing insanity, an example of 40 years of drug use. They now take one of the greatest mass murderers of all time and show him to be a humane man who united his nation. I guess in a few more years we'll see the softer side of Adolf, the man who loved Blondie.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Guys, give me some nice music, would you, on the opening to this hour? Any rock and roll will do. What is this, Muddy Waters?
Maybelline.
No, not Muddy Waters. Chuck Berry, Maybelline. I was asking for Muddy Waters. This is good. This is good.
You done started doing the thing you used to do.
Music stolen by a record producer in Detroit who made a fortune. As was the great music of the blues musician, stolen by a record producer. Went on to star in The Sopranos as a character, of course.
Why can't you be true?
I say, do I consider this art? I do. See, you know, you don't understand. If I knock rap music or crack music, I do so because it's not music. This is music. Or play blues music for a minute. Let's play Muddy Waters for a minute. Anything that's really good. But get past the harmonica, would you? Get into the actual piece for one 30-second piece. Just for an example, before we talk about Mongolia.
Oh, yeah, what I want. I need some money, honey. I need some money right away. I need some money so bad. I need some money. Oh, yeah.
All right, now why would I, as a guy sitting up here like some judge, consider Muddy Waters to be an artist and not consider rap music to be artists? Why? What's the difference between Muddy Waters and the current crop of crack music, for example? And it goes back to what I was telling you last night. So I go to the Impressionist exhibit, and I come back today and I talk about what the left has done to America, where they've deconstructed all of Western civilization, and they've destroyed art, where you think that all art is equal, all cultures are equal. In other words, everything is equal, so you don't know what's what, right? And look how far it goes. Here in the San Francisco area, I'm not making this up now. This could be a parody if it wasn't real. Genghis Khan, the exhibition, opening soon in a local Bay Area museum. And it says, learn about the two faces of Genghis Khan, conqueror and statesman. Khan's infamous brutality is well known, but there's another side of the man who formed the first united Mongol nation. Find out about Genghis Khan, the statesman and conqueror. Genghis brought us passports, the Pony Express, printed money, hamburgers, and even pants. Now, of course, he was a bloodthirsty murderer. He killed, I don't know if it was millions or hundreds of thousands, but he usually killed everyone in the city when he conquered them. Now it's revisionist history because things Asian are considered great in the San Francisco area. Any Asian, even an Asian mass murderer, is now revered as a cultural hero. And so I suppose in a few years, as the world turns, there will soon be an exhibit on the two sides of Adolf Hitler that will soon be coming out in the Bay Area. Find out about Adolf Hitler, the statesman and conqueror. He brought us the Volkswagen. He brought us the Autobahn and many other advancements. You do know that he has, you know about Hitler's infamous brutality. But there is another side of Hitler who formed and brought the German people together. Now, what would you say if an exhibit like that appeared in a museum? I could just imagine what the gutter rat pickle saleswoman would be saying on CNN. This exhibit was organized by blah, 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 blah. And I'm not making this up. If I made this up, it wouldn't be funny. Developed Genghis Khan in cooperation with the Mongolian Ministry of Education, Culture and Science in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. Lenders including the National Museum of Mongolian History, and so forth. The Military Museum of Mongolia, the Dormod Province Museum of Mongolia, and the Kuros and Gotuako families, the Xinhuan Collection, etc. Now, why would they bring an exhibit of Genghis Khan to San Francisco? And why would they glorify a mass murderer like Genghis Khan? Well, I'll let you figure it out, because things Asian are considered superior, especially in the Bay Area, where fundamentally all of the art is... Let me not generalize any further than that. I think I made my point, and I think we can move on. I'm not going to talk about art anymore, because it will be at the risk of losing my audience, which is not interested in this kind of thing. I think what you're interested in is the basic meat and potatoes. Okay. So we'll give you the meat and potatoes. Eric Holder. I can say things right now. I'll get a reaction from the audience. I know your hand is on the dial and on the button. Attorney General Eric Holder. Adelaide, you stopped. Barack Hussein Obama, you stopped. Homeland and Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, you stopped. You're not turning the dial anymore. Nancy Pelosi says thanks to the new health care bill, you can quit your job and taxpayers will pick up the tab and you can give up your day job. That's always good for a laugh. But the best thing of the week has been Assistant Secretary of Hate, Michael Posner, who talks about a dialogue he had with the dictators of China where they harvest the organs of political dissidents. And he brings up discrimination against Muslim Americans in America as though it's equal to the treatment of dissidents in China. I want you to listen to clips 25 and 26.
Is there any areas in which China sort of turned the tables and raised its own complaints or concerns about U.S. practices?
Let's stop right here. Again, as I told you yesterday, that little voice that you heard is allegedly a reporter. It is not. It's a pimp setup voice of the government media complex who asks a loaded question of a government agent so the government agent can then spit in the face of the American people. Let's listen to it.
Was there any areas in which China sort of turned the tables and raised its own complaints or concerns about U.S. practices?
We did plenty of that. We had experts from the U.S. side, for example, yesterday talking about treatment of Muslim Americans in an immigration context. We had discussion of racial discrimination. We had a back and forth about how each of our societies are dealing with those sorts of questions.
You piece of garbage. Hold it. You know, in my opinion, this man should be arrested for sedition. I have never heard anything like this. This is a State Department double agent taking the side of China, equating the treatment of Muslim Americans in America to how dissidents are treated in China. Why does this man still have his job? Why was he selected by Barack Obama? Why does Hillary Clinton still serve? Why is she still a Secretary of State if she permits people like this to function within her bureaucracy? The fact is, we're living in very, very sick times, that when a man like this can make a statement like that and think that it would not be debated in America. You're telling me that Muslims in America are treated on an equal par to how dissidents are treated in China? This man is presenting that as a rational idea? Well, let's talk about how Muslims are treated in China. Whenever there's been a Muslim uprising in China, what they usually do is they go in and kill everybody in town. That's how the Chinese treat Muslims in their uneasy provinces in the heart of China. Now, for this State Department official to say that the way Muslims are treated in America is equivalent to that, borders not on the seditious. It is seditious. But this is total insanity to think he could get away with this. Now listen to what this vermin, Michael Posner, of the State Department, says about Arizona.
Did the recently passed Arizona immigration law come up? And if so, did they bring it up or did you bring it up?
We brought it up early and often. It was mentioned in the first session and as a troubling trend in our society and an indication that we have to deal with issues of discrimination or potential discrimination.
Now, here's another one whose grandparents probably fled the Tsar of Russia, who now wakes up and now he wants to become the Tsar of the State Department. And so to get there, he stabs America in the back. He continuously stabs her over and over again in order to become a mini-petty dictator. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. It cannot get any worse, but it will get much worse before it gets better. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This you're not going to believe. It gets crazier by the minute. The world's best inventions. They just did a poll in England. Now, after you hear what they ranked the best inventions of the world, the 100 greatest inventions, okay? Number one, the wheel. But number 8 is the iPhone. Number 11 is the contraceptive pill. Number 22 is toilet paper. 25 is Google. Now, how could Google be an invention? The shoe is number 30. Laptops are number 35. The iPod is the number 56 of the most important invention in the history of the world. Number 60 is eBay. The chairs are number 67. The push-up bra comes in at number 77, beating out binoculars and calendars. Now, not on this list. You read this list and you realize why many British should be banned from Britain, by the way. But you ask yourself, where is the condom on this list of the world's best inventions? And some would rank Viagra as the greatest invention, greater than the wheel, I would think, because what good is a wheel if you can't get a girl with it? And if you can get a girl, what do you need a wheel for at that point? Look, I can go from the sublime to the ridiculous if you want me to. I mean, where do you want to go? 100 greatest inventions, wheel, aeroplane. Why do the British spell it so weirdly? Aeroplane. Light bulb, internet, PCs, telephone, penicillin. iPhone, toilet, combustion engine, contraceptive pill, washing machine, central heating, fridge, painkillers, steam engine, freezer, camera car, spectacles, mobile phones. Mobile phones beat out toilet paper? Oh, yeah? Tell me that after you visit a Pakistani restaurant in London near the tube. The Hoover. They call vacuums the Hoover. Well, we call them something else here. The train. The Google, the microwave, the email, the pen, the hot water. This is crazy. Hot water. They call hot water an invention. They're crazy. Who wrote this up? What illiteracy? Laptop, knife and fork, scissors, paper, space travel. Space travel is an invention? The level of illiteracy is beyond comprehension. How do you link space travel in with the iPhone and in with a match? Teabag is an invention. The umbrella, the iPod, the taps? What's a tap? A water tap. eBay is number 60. 61 is a DVD player. Nappies are number 62. I guess that's diapers. Suntan lotion is number 64. Lawnmower, 65. Makeup, 66. Chairs, sunglasses. The game of football, they consider an invention. Sliced bread, sofa. Sofa's an invention to the Brits. Motorways are an invention. Head and earphones, towels, push-up bra. The push-up bra beats binoculars to the Brits. which is, I suppose, a pretty clear statement on the state of the Royal Navy. Number 79 is WD-40, mascara, hair dryer, Facebook, escalator, hair dye, spell check, calendars, cheese grater, buses. Post-it notes are number 90. I'd put them in the top 10. Gloves, satellite disc, pedestrian crossing, baby's dummy. What is a baby's dummy? Pacifier. Baby's dummy. Sounds like our president. Curtains, bottle opener, food blender, dustpan and brush, desks, and clothes peg. All right. So the iPhone beats the beats penicillin. Oh, no. Penicillin beats the iPhone just by a nose. Okay, well, there you go. Now you understand why they banned Michael Savage from Britain. What do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? Any topic is not fair game. Chad in Texas, thanks for calling. What's on your mind, Chad?
Yes, Dr. Savage, you were absolutely correct when you said that North Korea would be found responsible for the torpedoing of that South Korea ship. And as I understand, South Korea has released or is about to release a report saying they're almost 100% sure that it was North
Korea. Oh, yes. But of course I was right. But you don't expect the stooges in the media to make an issue of that, do you? Because the government has told them not to make an issue of North Korea because it'll show Obama to be further, more incompetent than you can believe. Moreover, North Korea is a nuclear power. North Korea is an aggressor. We have the means to stop him, but we don't have the government to stop him.
It's sad.
It's not sad. It's very dangerous. It's very dangerous, the incompetence that we have in the government with their heads in the sand. State Department says that they're critical of the Arizona law, but they haven't read it. Homeland Security Napolitano hasn't read the bill, but she calls it bad. So, Senator, State Department, Secretary of State moron Michael Posner compares Arizona to a China human rights issue. Does it get worse than Nancy Pelosi saying, if you're a musician, leave your day job and the government will take care of you? That's it's an entrepreneurial bill. It's incomprehensible. Five U.S. troops dead. In Afghanistan, Taliban attacker kills at least 18 in Afghan capital, including five U.S. troops. 1,000 Americans are now dead in Afghanistan. No mention by ABC, CBS, or NBC, because this is Obama's war. Make no mistake about it. He can't win it, and he won't lose it, and he won't withdraw the men. Does anyone know why we are in Afghanistan? Because I don't. Tell me, I'm the conservative. I say we should pull out of Afghanistan. Tell me why we're there. Tell me, why are the liberals in favor of staying in Afghanistan? Can anyone explain it to me? Because it's Obama's war. Anything Obama wants, Obama gets. That's the way it works. When you are the slave master, the slaves do as you wish. And so the slave master says Afghanistan is a good war because it's Obama's war. Afghanistan is a good war because it's got a D next to it, not an R. Therefore, it's okay. It's an okay war. By the way, someone just asked me, where is radio on the list? That's interesting. I don't see radio or TV. Isn't that something? That's amazing. It's not here? They put a Hoover above television or the radio? How about Hooters? Is Hooters on here? They could call Hooters as an invention, these morons. They compare. They say the 100 great inventions, and they put an invention, the game of football. That's not an invention. It's a game. So then why not just put on Hooters or something like that and call that an invention too? I still don't know what a baby's dummy is. I do think it was probably Gordon Brown, since this came out of England. Government-supplied nappies are very important to the Brits, along with tea bags. They get government nappies and tea bags along with their welfare check. And then once a year, they get a paid vacation by the government to go to Mallorca. They go to Mallorca to have calamari. And they consider themselves free. 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 Free at last.
Savage.
So here's a story. Queen's attack leaves woman brain dead. It's two sentences long. A 23-year-old Chinese woman was left brain dead yesterday after a pipe-wielding drunkard in Queens slammed her in the head, dragged her into an alley, and sexually abused her, cops said. She was walking on 41st Road at 9 p.m. when Carlos Salazar Cruz, age 28, grabbed a pipe and smacked her in the face, police sources said. A couple of questions arise. If this had occurred in Arizona, would that crime be considered sufficient for the police to ask his immigration status? Why would liberals say that Carlos Salazar Cruz's immigration status, so to speak, is of no concern to the Chinese woman who was left brain dead yesterday after being hit in the head with a pipe, dragged into an alley and sexually abused? And then there's a bigger question. Why is it that attacks on Chinese, whether it be in Queens or in San Francisco, where it's an epidemic, Chinese are being attacked repeatedly? Usually the helpless elderly are being beaten up by street thugs. Why is it being unreported or not reported at all by the media? Why are the Chinese not considered victims in America? It's a very important question. In fact, there was a hearing in San Francisco because there was a man I told you about a few weeks ago who was attacked. He went to help his son, and two thugs beat him to death in the street. I sent some money to his family, and maybe some of you did. We put his banking information on the site. It was a horrible story. The man had honor. They beat up his son. He went back to talk to the street crack thugs. They punched him in the face, two young thugs, vermin. His head hit the pavement. He never recovered, and he died. I mean, it's heartbreaking. The man had honor and went to show his son what honor was, and he got killed for it. So the Chinese community asks for a hearing about crime against the Chinese in San Francisco, primarily by African Americans, I'm sorry to say. And take a guess what the upshot of it is. The African American community gets incensed and screams at the police, "Where were you when we were asking you to talk about the violence in our community?" Which, of course, misses the point. Because the violence in one community doesn't justify the violence in another community, number one. And it's not Chinese who are singling out African-American elderly to beat them up, is it? But because there is no physical political courage in America, especially in San Francisco and New York and cities like this, there was no justice for the Chinese community. And that's why it's important to mention this story to you on the Savage Nation. Jason in Wisconsin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Michael. I know it gets boring hearing callers say that all the time, but I just love your show. And I'm in one of those moods today. I don't want to hear politics. I don't want to hear all that stuff. But when I listen to you, I think of like you're this generational carryover where I get to go back in time. I'm not that old of a guy, but it reminds me. I get my haircut. I told your producer I get my haircut at a barbershop, guys. Been cutting hair there 50 years, and when I walk in there, I think of your show, I think of him, and I just wanted to call and say how much I love your show. And
So in other words, I remind you of a barber.
Yeah, my barber. It doesn't
okay, I'll be the barber of Seville. Thank you for Aries, don't be too generous with your time and your money, as you only have so much to give, and an easy-come-easy-go attitude. Maybe fun today, but it won't be so much fun tomorrow if you end up poor. I don't know what that has to do with anything. My thing is I give away too much of my time to people. You know what I found? If I talk to the wrong people, I'm actually brain dead for the day. One bad conversation, either on the phone or in person, I can hardly function on the radio. It's amazing what happens. It's a great skill, talk radio, to do it right. And it requires total focus, like any art. You have to focus. And if your focus gets blown at all during that day, I'm telling you, the show gets affected by it. Lindsay Lohan, high marks from alcohol ad. You see, this is where you talk about the melting down. Every day they report on a degenerate from Hollywood and what she's doing because she has a publicist who sleeps with the newspaper I don't know how it works. It's crazy. So the kids have no chance in America today. You almost have to send them to a nunnery in Switzerland, unless that's even more dangerous today than a public school. I don't know. Is a nunnery safe anymore? Would you send your daughter to a nunnery? What, you know what goes on now? I mean, remember all the nuns helped Hillary. It was the nuns who helped Nancy Pelosi get the health care bill through. So the nuns now are on my list if I don't give money to. For a while, I was enamored of nuns. No more, not a dime. Not a nickel goes to nunneries anymore. Not a nickel goes to nunneries. They're a stooge of the government. And whatever happened to the separation of church and state? Isn't there something wrong with this that Nancy Pelosi can use nuns to sell a health care bill? And she gets nuns to come out and talk about a socialized medical bill, and no one says take away their 501c3 funding, or a what's his name, the guy from Los Angeles, Archbishop whatever McPhoney, comes out in favor of illegal immigration, and the church, the Archdiocese of LA, doesn't have its 501c3 status revoked when they're working for the government on illegal immigration. Why is it that the entire religious hierarchy in America, whether it be Catholic or Jewish, why are they all in favor of illegal immigration? Can anyone explain that to me? Why are the Jews that naive? What, is there that many illegal immigrants are Jewish? They're sneaking in from Mexico to join a synagogue in Great Neck? I don't follow that one. I mean, I understand the Catholic need to fill the pews, and they'll take it even from illegal aliens, since most people basically are afraid to bring their children around a church today. But where do the Jews shine in to be in favor of illegal immigration? What, they lose their brains? I see they're all flooding in to join a synagogue in Rego Park. They can't wait to come from Mexico City and get back to their roots. Montana, Terry, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. I'm just calling about your question about why the reporters ignore the crimes against Chinese. And I think it really goes all back to liberalism and what liberalism about, and it's about jealousy. You know, there's nothing more, nothing makes them more jealous than somebody who works hard and works their way to the top.
You mean the Chinese are a bad immigrant group to get behind because they come here and they work their behinds off, their children get straight A's, and they go to the great schools. That's a terrible immigrant group because it shows everything the liberals oppose. They don't need a government handout, in other words. Is that it?
That's certainly part of it. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting observation. They're the most silenced of all of the minorities in this country, are the Chinese. It's interesting. You would think the liberals would favor the Chinese community because of the deep ties, but then you realize that the Chinese that come here are opting out of the communist nation of China, and they're dying to live in a capitalist nation. So again, the libs don't like them. Huh. How do you like that? Marianne, Pittsburgh, welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, the Catholics are not afraid to send their kids to church. But the reason I called was about the invention question, and that is that during the year 2000, there was a survey of what was the most important invention of the second millennium, and I did not hear it on the list.
You didn't hear which on the list?
I didn't hear the most important invention of the second millennium on the list, which is the printing press.
Well, but to the liberal, the printing press is not important. The iPhone is.
Of course.
And, of course, to the liberal, sunglasses are more important than the printing press.
Right. So I just,
and, of course, the cheese grater is number 88 because a liberal needs cheese. And then, of course, the razor blade is number 72 because the liberal likes the razor blade in case they need to end their life. They need a razor blade. Most of them don't grow enough hair on their chin to shave it off. Thank you. Motorways are number 74. Sliced bread is 70. Where's the pizza on here? I mean, I would rank pizza above the Hoover. You know, it's funny. If you would ask me if I would have ranked my 100 most important inventions, pizza would definitely exceed the roof. It would be higher on the list than the roof. Air conditioning to me is in the top 10. I can't function without it in the heat. I hate the heat. The freezer? I never use a freezer. In fact, I don't even know why refrigerators have freezers. I rarely use anything frozen. I mean, you get it, you use it, and throw it in, and you throw it out. Hair dye? I tried that for the beard once. I hated it. That Just for Men? Ooh, is that horrible what it does to you. Do you use any of that Just for Men? It's so bad. And if you're gray, be gray. What do you got to dye your hair for? What do you think, you're Ronald Reagan? I mean, what's the point? Are you going to run for president when you're 72? Why do you need hair dye? I love this one, baby's dummy. I still don't know what that is. It's a pacifier. They call it a baby's dummy? I'm looking at the 100 most important inventions, according to 4,000 Brits who were surveyed, and they don't mention the printing press. They don't mention the condom or Viagra, and I'm not ranking them in that order. But the number one greatest invention to the Brits are the wheel, the airplane, the light bulb, the internet, PCs, the telephone, penicillin, and then the iPhone. The contraceptive pill is number 11, but there's no condom on this. So you have to ask yourself, I mean, how feminized have these people become that they would say the contraceptive pill but not the condom? How about the gun? Why is the gun not here? Wouldn't you say that the gun is one of the world's greatest inventions, Beowulf? I would. Without the gun, there'd be no America. Think about that. And once they take the gun away, there will be no America. Think about that. Think about Genghis Kagan, who they want to put on the Supreme Court. They want to put Genghis Kagan on the Supreme Court, who wants to take away the First and Second Amendments. What do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? Oh, God, I can't wait to see the results tonight. Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, leads in Kentucky GOP Senate primary and early vote count. There's the first return. Full primary coverage on the Savage Nation as it comes in here. Rand Paul is leading Secretary of State Trey Grayson in Kentucky's GOP primary with an eye toward giving anti-big gov movement its most significant political victory. Yet I'm for him. I'm absolutely for it. I hope that Spector goes to work in a meatpacking plant in Philadelphia after this. That's how he should spend his last years, is working in a meatpacking plant. I'll be right back.
Savage.
New article, new dads can suffer depression as well as women. It's not just moms who get postpartum depression. More than 1 in 10 fathers become depressed after the birth of their child, according to a new study that researchers said underscores the need for more awareness of men's depression. It's interesting to me because I studied this many years ago, and I wrote Healing Children Naturally. By the way, the latest printing just arrived at my website supplier. It got there today, finally, because the demand for it's gone up again. And, if you look at this book on delaying the nutritional groundwork, I want to read something to you, How to Feed During Illness, Often Overlooked. You know about that. But did you know that I have a diet for prospective parents, nutritional factors and sterility, something your doctor won't tell you, with a diet to improve fertility, what supplements, semen counts improve via certain vitamins, rules to eat by outline, some health food concepts faulty. If you think it's all about that, you're wrong. The ethnic factor is also important, and I talk about ethnic and cultural differences when evaluating the nutritional status of the mother and later of her children. I talk about the old idea of the fetus as parasite, which is why women are brought to hospitals and treated as though they're diseased and that the fetus should be removed from them rather than delivered as a child, the idea of a fetus as a parasite. Feeding occurs across the placenta, changes in the mother during the first 3 months of pregnancy. And then I go on and on. And this is very important for you, I think, if you're a young mother or you want to get pregnant and you're a father. The pill increases the need for vitamin B6. Have you heard that from your doctor? Many factors produce deficiencies. Dietary deficiencies during pregnancy. You didn't know about that one. I remember I was working in a men's health clinic in 1980-81. In fact, it was a gay men's health clinic, which I want to repeat over and over again for those of you who have the wrong idea of me. And one of the guys at the time was actually married to a woman who got pregnant. And during her pregnancy, she lost all of her teeth. And it turns out that she lost all of her teeth because she was not taking sufficient calcium, magnesium. She wasn't eating sufficient calcium. And as you well know, or you may not know, nature is such that the fetus takes from the mother all of the essential nutrients, even at the expense of the mother. The developing child, the developing fetus, is considered more important to nature than the mother herself. So all of her calcium was leached out of her bones. The calcium was leached out of her teeth for the developing baby skeleton, and she lost all of her teeth. It was an amazing story. So you have to be very careful about which nutrients you take. But I want to get to the postpartum depression for men. And I go into food fascism disavowed. And I want to get to this postpartum. I know I did the postpartum depression because I knew that women certainly had postpartum depression then. But it's not all psychological is the point I'm trying to make. When a woman has a developing organism in her body called a fetus, all the nutrients that the baby needs comes through the mother. And in some cases, the mother herself is deficient in certain critical nutrients. They go to the baby first. And the baby winds up surviving, and the mother winds up either ill in some cases, if she's not getting sufficient nutrients or eating right. Or after the birth, she's been through a trauma. She often gets very depressed. And you should look into some of the nutrients that are depleted during birth. There are phenomenal amounts of nutrients that are lost during birth. And why in the world women are not given an immediate broth after delivering a baby is a mystery to me. Instead of a drug, oh, you're depressed, here, have a Valium. Or you're depressed, take a Prozac. The worst thing you can do to the woman. You've got to look at how women handled childbirth in other cultures through eons. And what were they doing for diet after the baby was born? You know, we've heard the story about the woman in the rice paddy who kneels down and gives birth and goes back to lifting, you know, pulling the rice. Why is it that it's such a trauma here in America? Well, there's many reasons for it. The babies were smaller in that society because of different diets, etc. But all I'm saying is there are many, many facts that have been lost over time that I collected in Healing Children Naturally, which I think could be one of the greatest legacies I leave behind. I mean, I've written some great political books. I have. But if you ask me which book might actually be around 50 years from now, it could be this book. And I'm not trying to sell a book. For God's sakes, you know me by now. I don't need it, you know, to sell you a book. You need the book, not me. Healing Children Naturally on MichaelSavage.com. Great subject, postpartum depression. Don't call about it. It's very, very dangerous for women because they don't know why they're depressed. And it's not because you gave birth and you're depressed. It's because you gave birth and you gave up an awful lot of very important nutrients related to your mood to the baby and also to the delivery procedure itself, to the procedure of childbirth, which is quite traumatic. Okay, even speaking as a man, I understand this. You're depleted. You've gone through a trial, a 9-month trial. You've done something men cannot do. It's one of the most noble acts a woman can perform is having a baby. When have you heard that lately? Never. Why is childbirth shunned the same way death is shunned in America? You thought about that? Death is not talked about in America. Burial is not talked about in America to any extent, nor is actual childbirth. When have you last heard anyone in the media say that bearing a baby and delivering a baby is about the most noble act a woman can perform? When have you heard that last? Never. It goes along with how I started the show today, the deconstruction of civilization by the students of Foucault, who have been fooled by Foucault, into thinking that by rebuilding society in the image of the Marxist revolutionaries, they're going to have a perfect society. The opposite is true. The opposite is true. And that's why I try to tell you that being a conservative is life-supporting. Being a conservative is the only sane thing for a parent or a father to be. You cannot be a liberal and raise a child sanely. I can guarantee you that if you think that I'm making a statement that is foolish, you get back to me when your children are 14 and 15 and tell me that I was wrong. You'll find out that you were wrong, that your liberalism and your ultra-tolerance has enabled them to take the wrong roads in life. Now, there's no guarantee that the other road is going to produce perfect children. I understand that. We're talking about relative risk factors. And if you think bashing the Amish is the way to raise a child, and if you think that's the mark of intelligence, I've got another pickle coming to you. This is the Savage Nation. New dads, too, can suffer depression. If you want to read about postpartum depression or healing children naturally, read Michael Savage's Healing Children Naturally, available only on MichaelSavage.com. It's for you, not for me.
Savage. Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I am very proud to be able to sign the Daniel Pearl Freedom of the Press Act, a piece of legislation that sends a strong signal about our core values when it comes to the freedom of the press.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel. Stole a kiss at the turn of a mile.
Questions for the Savage Nation today were, well, we talked a little bit about art and politics. And can you name a prominent American artist alive today? I can't. And what is real art to you anyway? When was the last time you actually went to an art museum, and what was your experience? Do you think Obama will recognize Michael Savage under the new Freedom of the Press law as a member of the media who has been censored by a foreign country? And the elections today, the primaries, will the liberal candidates be defeated in today's primary election? Interesting. Very big topics. Today I want to talk about art, from the political to the polemical, whatever that means, right? Well, listen. Last night I went to an art show of Impressionist paintings. And I was stunned by their beauty all over again. Nowhere in America today are such works of art being produced. For example, I asked you, can you name one artist who creates works of art on the level of a Degas or a Renoir? What's amazing is that even the art of that era was sometimes political. But in the world of art, we've gone from the political to the polemical. Can you think of a single artist today whose art is intended to uplift instead of offend? Can you think of an artist whose work describes instead of degrades, that reveres instead of reviles? There's no one, no Western nation, that currently produces great artists or sculptors, and it's because of the same leftism that has destroyed our political system. Let me explain. When the Nazis rose to power in Germany, they took many of the great works of art, or which they considered to be degenerate, and removed them from museums. The works of Jewish artists such as Chagall and Kandinsky and others were taken from public view. Ironically, many classical works of art were stolen and hoarded by high-ranking officials of the Nazi regime. Similarly, after the Russian Revolution, the Bolsheviks tried to put all art into the service of the dictatorship of the proletariat. Stalin issued a decree on, quote, the reconstruction of literary and art organizations, and only art in the, quote, socialist realism style was allowed. Sound familiar? The Nazis and the Soviets, both socialist regimes, allowed only art that fell in line with their extreme political agenda. They depicted muscled factory workers in overalls struggling in a steel foundry, or heroic visions of soldiers hearkening back to the Roman Empire. These paintings, posters, and sculptures were propaganda, not real art. Art of earlier generations was derided as bourgeois or degenerate and deconstructed so it could be replaced with a viewpoint imposed by the state. Sound familiar? Well, and that's what seems to be what's happening again, where? In the West. Real art is being hollowed out and replaced with garbage that serves the needs of the state. You see, great art is by its very nature conservative. That's right, I said it exactly the way it is. Great art is by its very nature conservative. Crap art and crap artists are liberals. A great painting conserves a moment in time or an emotion so that it can be experienced by future generations. The conservative bees build up, the progressive termites tear down. They critique art and impose meanings upon it that are designed to further their far-left political agendas. They say that Degas' paintings of ballet dancers are sexist, that Renoir's portraits of families reinforce the patriarchal hegemony of the 19th century, and so on. But the art that is created by left-wingers is destructive. A painting of the Virgin Mary in elephant dung, a crucifix in a jar of urine, or a mindless repetition of images such as Andy Warhol's soup cans, that is designed to render the very structure of art meaningless. You see, the goal of liberal, postmodern, deconstructive art is to tear down the old institutions such as the church, the family, the nation, and to replace them with chaos. Because out of chaos, you have an environment that is ripe for the takeover by a monolithic dictatorial view of culture, in which only one opinion on an issue is allowed. And what would that be, huh? In the world of art, this means giant portraits of the great leader mounted on every empty wall, as we saw with the Obama posters in 2008. And in the political world, it means a dictatorship, the kind of dictatorship that Woody Allen and other so-called members of the progressive art community wish Obama had. The left has deconstructed art, and now they want to deconstruct our nation as well. Let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. I'll take a call now on the Savage Nation. Here's Samantha, New York City, WOR. Go ahead, please.
I want to tell you that don't take what's going on so personally. They're doing this to ear you because they know you're compassionate about the truth. And the other day, I was very scared for you. I thought you was going to, you know, have an heart attack on the radio.
No, I did. I've had a little headache since then.
I laugh at you, Dr. Savage.
Samantha, tell me where you're from.
I'm from Jamaica.
Because I have a friend from Africa. I could swear she's your sister.
No, but I've been to Africa. I've done a lot of missionary works there. My last trip was last year in Ghana. And the other day when you were saying about no matter how where you go, it's the same thing. You were right. People travel all over the world, but no matter where you go, it's the same thing. It's just a different country.
Exactly. People are people everywhere. Am I right? That's what you're saying, in essence. It doesn't matter whether they're driving in a chauffeured limousine or they have flies buzzing around their eyes because they're starving and poor. Fundamentally, they're the same person.
Yeah, and I still go back.
Amazing. Well, what draws you to my show? I want to know why you listen. You're a woman given to missionary work. What is it that you hear when I speak?
I hear the truth, and the truth has no friend, Dr. Savage.
Oh, God. The truth has no friend.
The truth has no friend. Your friends are very far and between when you speak the truth. And
no, I know that. That's 100% true. I'm a loner. I'm a loner. People don't understand me. I know that. I have millions of listeners, but no friends in that regard. No, it's true. I'll admit it. It's not like I have barbecues on the weekend with guys hanging around, with, you know, like in a movie. You know, it's not like a cop barbecue in Borough Park. I love these cop movies. They're supposedly all barbecuing on weekends with each other, every cop movie. I don't think they do that either. Do you have a lot of friends?
Don't let these people get to you. You read a couple of verses the other day. If this
Samantha, you're reaching me. I want to know, do you have many friends as a missionary?
Well, I like to help people.
No, but other than the people you help, can you count the number of friends you have on both hands?
No, because I don't have, because I tell them the truth and they don't speak with me. I have a friend for many years and I tell her about Obama and she cursed me out. She said, I'm racist. I said, it's not a matter of color.
Wait a minute. Are you yourself a person of color?
Nowhere.
Samantha, are you yourself a person of color?
Yes, I am. But
How could she say your dislike of Obama's policies are because you're a racist? How could she say that?
Because she's shallow-minded and she's stupid like all the people who put him in the White House. How could you put somebody in the White House who you know nothing about?
Samantha, are you yourself a Christian missionary?
No, I am just a young woman who is doing the will of my heart. I don't get myself focused on any religion, if you ask me. But
wow.
I do not disrespect people of their religion. I just do what I'm supposed to do, and I do it with gratitude, and it makes me feel good that I can help people. I'm not in the
You know,
religion.
Samantha, I'd like to listen to you on a weekend. I go to your church. If you had a pulpit somewhere, I'd go and listen. You soothe me just listening to you.
Dr. Savage, I go to church 24/7 in my heart. I don't have to go in a building. It's useless.
I feel the same way. I'm in a constant dialogue with the man upstairs, day and night. Sometimes I turn from him. Sometimes I actually shun him. Sometimes I hide from him. Sometimes I say, why did you do this to the world? Why do you let the evil get away with it? But you know what? I know he's always there. There's nothing I can do about it. That's an immutable fact. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
The stock market 1,000-point drop was explained away as some accounting error. Oh, a fat finger, mathematical problem, or anything but an attack on our economic system. Joining us now with an exclusive first look at a different opinion with his book entitled Killing Wealth, Freeing Wealth, is Floyd Brown. Mr. Brown, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on. I'll tell you, we are stirring up a hornet's nest with this book, Killing Wealth, Freeing Wealth.
Well, what do you think is going on here?
Well, we know for sure that it wasn't somebody's fat finger. What it was a very tenuous stock market sending signals that I think almost every investor should watch very, very closely. I believe that there is a group of traders, we dub them killionaires in the book. These are people who really don't add any value to the economy. All they do is they're bloodsuckers that suck the life out of America, and they use market volatility to do that. It hurts pension funds. It hurts people with IRAs. It hurts everybody across the board, but they laugh all the way to the bank about it.
Well, why do they let it go on? It's because they're all one.
Well, I think it's allowed to go on because these people have very big wallets that they spread around Washington, D.C., and you have kind of a cabal between the political elites and the business elites. I mean, probably the top billionaire is George Soros, and you remember in 2008 when every single American was suffering. Well, he was chortling about the fact that he had a great year. He made billions off of the crash in mortgages, and so as a result of that, you know, he uses that money, he peddles that money in Washington, D.C. to keep his favorite politicians in office, chief among them, Barack Hussein Obama.
Do you think this will happen again?
Absolutely. Let me explain exactly what happened in Greece and why it created this contagion effect. What you had is you had some very savage, very savvy traders that what they were doing is they were, in essence, buying insurance that the Greek bonds would default, CDSs they're called. And they load up on these CDSs, and then they go into the bond market and they short these bonds, meaning they do everything they can to bring the value of those bonds down. It would be like buying insurance on your neighbor's house, is how it's explained sometimes, and then burning his house down to collect what benefit you would get from that. And so as a result of this, these traders make huge, huge profits, and really the people that are hurt, in this case, it's companies like Aflac, which had a huge position in Greek bonds. It's pensioners in Greece. It is you know, welfare mothers in Greece. It's the small guy that takes it right in the chops, and these big traders make out like bandits.
Well, what role did our government have in this?
Well, our federal government always comes in and bails these people out in the final analysis, and so after they had made these huge profits in the Greek bonds, then the Federal Reserve gets into the act, and Ben Bernanke extends a huge line of credit over to the European Central Bank. The European Central Bank steps in and starts buying these bonds. And the profits have been made, and the taxpayers get stuck with the ultimate bill. And so it is a process by which we are seeing America bilked. Each and every one of us, we all lose as a result of this. And, you know, Warren Buffett, I don't always agree with him, but I do agree with him when he said that these derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction. They are. And we expose it all in Killing Wealth, Freeing Wealth. And so, you know, if you don't believe me right now, just go get the book, read it, and then you can see the evidence for yourself.
So where do we go from here?
Well, what we all ultimately hope is that there'll be massive changes in Washington, D.C. I mean, right now we have a group of people, you know, I hate to call them criminals, but if they're not criminals, they're the next best thing. We have a group of thugs running our nation, and these people are profiteering off of us, and they're spreading the wealth around, but it always ends up in the hardworking man or woman ending up paying the bill, paying the price, and we're going to get poorer because of it, and especially our children and grandchildren are going to get poorer. That's where it all ends up in the final analysis, and we've got to stop it now.
Well, when do you think things will change for the better, if ever?
I'm hopeful that in November we're going to see some major changes. You know, I don't have the ability to see the future, but we can only hope and pray things get better. We can also do something else, and that is we can protect ourselves. There are a number of ways to protect yourselves. I'm a big believer in having some hard assets available to you, meaning some gold and silver. And investing in some companies that produce gold and silver. Those are ways that individuals can protect themselves. Also, I'm expecting to see a crash in the U.S. dollar. And when that crash comes, there's things you can do to protect yourself. Maybe you don't want to have all of your money in dollars right now, because I see the dollar headed for tough, tough times, just like the euro is right now.
Floyd Brown, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was a pleasure to visit with you, and I'm a big fan of the show. Listen to it. Wonderful country we love, the United States of America.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
The bailout of Greece highlights a very disturbing economic trend. Instead of making the right choices, working harder, and living within your means, well, just wait and let the government take care of everything. Sounds like what Pelosi's plan is for America. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Richard Rahn to talk about what we can expect to happen now in Europe and here at home. Richard Rahn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's really great to be with you again today.
Well, what do you think is happening now?
Well, first you have to understand the fundamental problem. And that is, the Greeks have been living way beyond our means for many years, enjoying the coffee shops, not working very hard. And the way they've been doing that is been borrowing money from the rest of the world. And finally, they've gotten to the point where they don't have the wherewithal to pay back the money. And they were having trouble selling bonds. And so now we have a situation where the rest of the world is bailing them out. Rather than let him just go bankrupt.
How is it going to help?
Well, it's going to help them in the short run because they will not have to make a severe cutbacks in their government spending and have as many layoffs and things as they would if the bailouts were not there. The problem with this is it doesn't solve the Greeks' long-run problem, and it also increases the risk for all the other countries are bailing them out, those in Europe and even the U.S., because we're doing it through the IMF. So what you have is a situation where virtually all the world's major countries have huge deficits. They're allowing what we call the GDP debt ratio to rise, and that's like if you kept getting a bigger and bigger mortgage each year and you couldn't afford your current mortgage and you kept adding on more debt. Well, that's what virtually all the major countries in the world are doing, even including Germany, very much so in the UK, very much so here. And so it speeds up the time when the rest of us go off the cliff, but buys Greece a little time.
Any signs that this problem is going to be corrected?
Well, there's great claims of all the wonderful things they're going to do to reduce spending. They're increasing tax rates. And I find that particularly ironic in that one of the big problems is in Greece, the people do not now pay the taxes that they're owed, and there's a huge amount of tax evasion. So now the government's going to increase the tax rate. If you don't pay your taxes when they're 40% of your income, are you going to pay your taxes when they increase the tax rate to 60%? I think not.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, we see that we've got a number of European countries in a great deal of trouble. In fact, most of them are. Portugal and Spain would be the next ones up. And the Portuguese and Spaniards are making some changes to both reduce spending. They've even cut government salaries a little bit. But it does not appear to me they are doing enough to really get out of the box. What they've done is just delay the period of time until when things go off the cliff.
How long can this actually go on?
Well, economists debate how big this debt-GDP ratio can become before you're in trouble or where it's unsustainable. And some believe as low as 90% of GDP, that is the debt, publicly held. Or others will say 130, 140, maybe even 150. The Greeks are roughly 120% of GDP, and they were going off the cliff. We've seen other countries in that range. There's a lot of things that factor in here. But let's take the U.S. Back in 2007, our debt ratio was only 37% of GDP. That means that the publicly held debt was only, again, 37% of what we produce each year. Now it's up to 65, close to 70% just in 3 years. Once we get over 90%, which will probably be anywhere from 2 to 5 years, then we're really in trouble. And I just don't see this as a very hopeful future for most countries in the short run. I tend to be an optimist over the long run. But I think the next few years are going to be really troublesome because you don't see the political will to do what you need to do, and that's basically rein in the medical entitlements. The medical entitlements are the things that are really driving most countries into bankruptcy. It's not the normal expenditures of government, not what we do on roads and highways and schools and that kind of stuff. It's the big medical transfer payments and retirement.
What can we expect to see in the next few years?
Well, I think what we'll see in the United States will be increasing interest rates, and still where a smaller business won't have the access to credit. We'll, I think, revisit the housing mess because we now have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac engaged in the same kind of irresponsible policies they did before, which helped get us into the whole mess. We have a situation in this country now where of the new mortgages being issued, 90% are either guaranteed by the U.S. government or actually owned by the U.S. government through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and some of the other federal housing programs. In Europe, the situation is even worse. Again, a number of these countries really have totally unsustainable fiscal policies. The British are running a deficit even bigger than ours relative to their economy, and I expect it's going to be very difficult for this coalition government to make the kind of spending reductions really needed in the UK. So the outlook is not very promising. I mean, you have other areas of the world, China, India, Brazil, places like that are growing, and they're doing fine, but not in Europe, not in the U.S.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
Well, we have a little bit of time before it's too late. But the Obama administration, when they issued their budget, they have to come out with a 10-year budget, had nothing in there to solve the problem. They just had us running over the cliff, which I thought was the height of their responsibility. And the Congress this year, the first time since the Budget Act, is not passing a budget. Now, the main function that Congress has under the Constitution is to pass the budget. I mean, why do we need a Congress if they're not even going to prepare and pass a budget? And this Congress seems to have no intent of doing so. So right now, we don't see the kind of responsibility in Washington that we really need. Maybe after the elections in the fall, people will emerge. But I don't see among the political class who's in charge that kind of responsibility. I see some individual members of Congress being very responsible. For instance, Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin has actually put out a real plan to deal with the whole fiscal mess, a very realistic plan. He deals with the entitlements, the medical entitlements, and Social Security and so forth. But even many of his fellow Republicans are, for whatever reasons, are afraid to sign on, even though they have no alternatives themselves, and the Democrats have just put their heads in the sand. I mean, it's an amazing performance. I've been around Washington for 30 years, and I have never seen such an irresponsible Congress as the present one. But these things change. I mean, eventually, things get bad enough and people wake up. In fact, it's interesting. The American people seem to be waking up much more so through the Tea Party movement than their own political leaders. The American people seem to understand you cannot continue to go on the way Greece is and California is and Illinois, that fundamental changes are needed. We have to reduce these government salaries, the number of government employees, these pensions, and the entitlements. It can't work. The math doesn't add up. It's not a matter of ideology. It's really fifth-grade arithmetic.
Richard Rahn, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Again, thank you very much for allowing me to express my views.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Anti-incumbent mood is playing because the public is fed up with a gridlock in Washington.
And now the young monsieur and madame.
Well, today, of course, is the day that primaries are being held around America. Some are saying it's time that that turncoat specter finally goes back to being a low-life lawyer where he started in Philadelphia. As you may know, Specter is perhaps the greatest emblem of everything wrong with American politics. He began as a Democrat. He hid a murderer. He helped the murderer escape justice in America named Ira Einhorn, helped him get out of the country. Then when the time was moving to the center, he became a Republican along the lines of Bloomberg, who claims to be a Republican. And then when things got tough for him, Specter switched back to being a Democrat. Well, we'll find out tonight, won't we? Finally, on michaelsavage.com, there's a few things that I'd like to point out. Taxpayers were stiffed for $1.6 billion on the Chrysler loan. Now, what you don't know about that money went to Italy. Shall we let that hang in the air? When we say Chrysler loan, who do you think got it? Well, you don't know who got it. Chrysler repaid $1.9 billion of a $4 billion loan. Really, where's the rest of it? Where'd the money go? Who is Chrysler? Who owns Chrysler? Well, here it is. Chrysler Holding is the parent company of the old Chrysler. It is owned by private equity firm Cerberus Capital Management. Well, who's Cerberus Capital Management? Well, Cerberus bought Chrysler from Daimler AG in 2007. See, it's a Ponzi scheme. But when you look into who Cerberus Capital Management, well, you'll see the government auto complex unfold. It's all on michaelsavage.com, and then you're going to have to dig a little further to find out just the scam. Fact. Just the scam, ma'am. Just the scam. It's all on michaelsavage.com, along with other very, very interesting stories. Before I go, there's a touching story on the bottom. A horse was shot twice with a crossbow by unknown vandals in England. And it survived after four fellow horses spent 3 hours taking turns to lick the wound clean and keep it alive. We can learn a lot from horses, don't you think? Do you know what's happening around the world? Have you seen what's happening in Greece? Do you know what's happening with the economy? Europe bailed them out to the tune of $1 trillion, and gold went to $1,220 an ounce. $1,220 an ounce. But if you look at the inflation-adjusted prices over the past 30 years, gold could go much higher than that. I've told you about my great advertiser, Swiss America, on this program before. You should reach out to them. SwissAmerica.com. The Greeks waited for a bailout. You shouldn't make the same mistake. Don't wait. Swiss America, now. Remember yesterday when I told you about Obama signing the Freedom of the Press Act, which should cover me, Michael Savage, and the fact that I've been banned from Britain? Well, not only did he refuse to mention Michael Savage, Obama refused to take questions from any member of the press on the day he talked about signing a Press Freedom Act.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you, guys. Speaking of press freedom,
Let's go.
You're certainly free to ask them, Jim.
Will you answer them? How about a question on Iran?
We won't be answering. I'm not doing a press conference today. But we'll be seeing you guys during the course of this week.
You see, yeah, Mr. President. And guess what? Remember when Attorney General Eric Holder admitted he hadn't read the Arizona immigration law that he criticized? Well, big sis Janet Napolitano hasn't read it either, even though she's attacked the Arizona bill.
If I might ask, have you had a chance to review the new law that was passed by the state of Arizona?
I have not reviewed it in detail. I certainly know of it, Senator.
So you're not prepared to make a judgment on it?
Senator, that is not a law. Let me just say this. As you know and are well aware, that's not the kind of law I would have signed. I believe that it's a bad law enforcement law. I believe it mandates and requires local law enforcement or puts them in a position many do not want to be placed in. When I was dealing with laws of that ilk, most of the law enforcement organizations in Arizona at that time were opposed to such legislation.
And here's Big Sis again apologizing for her failure on the oil spill.
With every incident that occurs, lessons are learned. And I think that's one of the reasons why the president has been so very clear that further deep water drilling permits are going to be stopped until this can be investigated and assurances can be gained that things have been changed so that we don't have a duplication of the Deepwater Horizon incident.
What is your assessment of the resources British Petroleum and its partners brought to the task in those initial days?
I thought you were going to ask a different question.
Well, I thought of asking you whether you were satisfied with the federal response, but I have a feeling I know what the answer to that would be, so I decided to ask you about the private sector response.
And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to give you the TikTok of the federal response.
And guess what? Just as Michael Savage has been telling you, terrorists are coming across the border from Mexico.
Most of the illegals caught crossing are from Mexico or South America, but thousands are classified as OTMs, other than Mexicans, including hundreds from nations that sponsor terror. We found illegals from Afghanistan, Egypt, Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, Sudan, and Yemen in custody.
And if you missed this, you better hold on to a desk. Here's the lawyer turned Assistant Secretary of State, Michael Posner, on how he talked with China, not about China's human rights problems, not about the harvesting of kidneys from political dissidents, but about racism against Muslims in America.
Was there any areas in which China sort of turned the tables and raised its own complaints or concerns about U.S. practices?
We did plenty of that. We had experts from the U.S. side, for example, yesterday, talking about treatment of Muslim Americans in an immigration context. We had discussion of racial discrimination. We had a back and forth about how each of our societies are dealing with those sorts of questions.
Poisoner, I would say you should be ashamed of yourself, but men like you have no shame. I have a pattern. It's a struggle sometimes, but truthfully, by the time I get on the air, I actually love it, and I sail through the hours on the radio. And it gives me great relief to be able to doing something, to be able to be doing something very useful, pointing out the hateful administration that we have. And I was saying, do people still say to a little child, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because when I was a kid, that was a major league question. The uncles, the father's friends, they leaned down. I couldn't have been four. What do you want to be when you grow up? They'd start with me when I was three. The work ethic has to be, you know, instilled in a child. It doesn't come out of the air. It doesn't come by spontaneous combustion, so to speak. You don't get it out of the air. A child has to be taught that work is beautiful, that work is essential, that work is the essence of living. Now, if you are in La Greek, where leisure is the essence of living, then we have nothing to talk about. The Greek society is very interesting. I mean, it's probably part of my background. But the Hellenists were fundamentally leisure-oriented. They were oriented towards beauty. There's nothing wrong with leisure or beauty. I understand that. But as a be-all and an end-all of existence, it's not enough for me. As a side job, fine. I mean, you can be a worker and still love beauty. You can pursue beauty. You can see beauty. You can steep yourself in beautiful music and beautiful art and beautiful poetry and beautiful flowers, if you wish, as I do. But the fact of the matter is to devote your whole life to beauty is, to me, already on the other side of the coin. So let me get back to the kids. So they say to a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? So kids start out with I want to be an astronaut. There was a time that a kid would say that. Or I want to be a baseball star. I want to be like, pick your favorite baseball star. Or I want to be like a football star, whoever. Now, I don't know what kids would say today, but you look at the role models that the vermin in the media hold up every day, each and every day. Who are the role models for our children today? It's one drug addict, one deviant, one anti-American slimeball after another. I don't even know who a kid holds up as a role model anymore. But I really don't think that there was a kid somewhere in Indonesia, you know, 40-odd years ago who said, when I grow up, I want to be the first Leninist president of the United States of America. I don't really believe that. People would say, I want to be the president of the United States of America. That I understand. I mean, I never said that. I never thought that that was possible. That's the Savage Nation today. Savage.